$65 billion in GST revenue was carved up amongst the states and territories today. The Commonwealth Grants Commission decides how much goes where for the coming financial year. While some will receive more than expected for their upcoming budgets, many state treasurers still want the distribution formula to be changed. Mark Butler is the Shadow Minister for Climate Change and Energy, and I spoke with him a short time ago. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Patricia.
The GST pool is $3.5 billion larger. WA gets a boost, which is ahead of projections. Can you tip your hat to the government on this?
All the government has done is try to steal some media about a pretty standard annual report from the Grants Commission. I mean, yes, it's shown that the GST take for WA has increased, as everyone expected it would, as the mining boom recedes further and further into the rear vision mirror. But there's not really much of a story here because Scott Morrison hasn't got a plan for the future yet.
New South Wales Treasurer says there needs to be a root and branch overhaul of GST distribution and the Commonwealth Grants Commission. Is the carve-up fair at the moment?
Well, I think we need to go back to first principles, and that is that the central concept of a Commonwealth is that every citizen is entitled to the same level of basic government service, like health and education and policing and so on, no matter what state they live in. And the fact of the matter is that all of the states of the Commonwealth have certain natural advantages and disadvantages. So to get to that central concept of a Commonwealth, you do need some sort of funding equalisation, and that has served the Commonwealth, I think, and all citizens of the Commonwealth very well for a long period of time. So it's important not to throw the baby out with the bathwater. Yes, we had a very substantial cyclical shift in WA because the mining boom over there was so significant. We as a Labor Party have found a way to deal with the impact of that with a one-off funding formula to underwrite some infrastructure investment in that state. But we're very concerned that we don't throw the baby out with the bathwater on this one.
But that's not a lasting solution. I mean, you just described it that way. It's a one-off.
Well, because it was a cyclical change. I mean, at the end of the day, for significant parts of the Commonwealth history, WA was a net recipient of the benefits of this fiscal equalisation formula. But it is true that the size of the boom meant that the downturn, or the hangover, if you like, from it in terms of GST distribution was quite substantial for WA. That will correct over time. And as an interim measure, we think there should be a one-off funding injection into the WA economy through infrastructure investment, which frankly we're able to fund because we're not throwing $65 billion of taxpayer funds at big company tax cuts.
So ultimately, you keep talking about not throwing out the baby with the bathwater. You just don't want to see a fundamental rewriting of the GST rules.
Well, these rules have served the Commonwealth very well. I mean, there are...
Well, they haven't worked well. If you're living in WA, you don't think they've worked very well.
That's right. And I think the Commonwealth and the Federal Labor Party has certainly looked at this, needs to find a way in which we deal with these cyclical changes, particularly that happen with economies like WA's. But the ongoing equalisation of, I guess, that entitlement to basic government service for all citizens of the Commonwealth must be absolutely central to the way in which we distribute Commonwealth funds.
Just on another topic, there was what you would consider a welcome prediction from unexpected quarters today. Home Affairs Minister Peter Dutton thinks Australia is on track for a Shorten-led government. Are we?
Well, we're focused on putting together a platform that we think will be a very compelling case for a change of government at the next election, and we've been pretty courageous about that, and I think we've put out more policy early in the electoral cycle than any opposition I can remember. So I think we're doing what we need to do to present ourselves as a compelling alternative government. And frankly, Malcolm Turnbull and his band of supporters and opponents seem to be doing everything they can to convince the Australian people that they're focused on themselves and their internal disputes rather than the wealth and the health of the nation.
Are you on track to win?
Well, it's still a long way away, the next election, and we're not taking anything for granted. We're still very focused on policy development, very focused on making sure we maintain the unity and the discipline that I think has been a hallmark of the Federal Labor Party since we lost government in 2013.
Just let's get to your main portfolio issues. Barnaby Joyce says AGL is trying to short the market by closing Liddell in 2022. Do you see them as chasing profits rather than service delivery?
Well, I think AGL has given 7 years' notice of the closure of this power station. Compare that to 5 months' notice given to the closure of the Hazelwood Power Station. And what AGL has said, after being pretty closely interrogated by the market operator, is that they've got a plan to fill that supply gap. I mean, obviously, a supply gap will emerge when you lose a large power station. It's inevitable that this happened because many of these power stations are approaching the end of their life. They were built in the 60s and the 70s. So you would want a company like AGL to be thinking about what it would build to fill that gap. And the market operator, under instruction from Malcolm Turnbull and Josh Frydenberg, assessed that plan and said that if AGL's plan was implemented, there would be no supply gap. And even if AGL doesn't implement it all, other energy companies, like Energy Australia, for example, another one of the big three, have also said they intend to invest in New South Wales in new kit that will last New South Wales not just a few more years, but a few more decades.
But the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission Chairman Rod Sims says that the sale of the power station to Alinda Energy would be a win for consumers and prevent any damage to the market from the plan to close Liddell in 2022, that consumers would get lower energy prices.
Well, Rod Sims and the ACCC are taking a view that they've had for a long time, that AGL was able to buy too many of the New South Wales power stations and it would have been better to distribute them more evenly across a number of companies, and that's sort of in the past. What the modelling has shown, though, is that the power that would come from a Liddell power station that was upgraded at the cost of probably $1 billion or so to operate for another 5 years would be 20 or 25% more expensive than the power New South Wales consumers would get from new renewable energy that was built to fill the gap. So what we do know from the modelling is that ploughing money into extending this old, increasingly unreliable coal-fired power station for another 5, 6 or 7 years is actually going to produce power far more expensive than the power that New South Wales households and businesses will get if AGL and other companies were able to invest in new stock that, as I said before, wouldn't last New South Wales a few more years, would last decades.
So you're taking a position on this. You think Liddell should close in 2022. You don't want it to be bought out.
Now, what I want is a proper national energy policy.
No, but on this issue, you've just made the case for the closure in 2022.
No. If Alinda buys the power station and ploughs money into it, that's going to be a commercial decision that they make. I mean, I think the effect of that would be potentially to delay investment in new energy technology that will last, as I said, for decades, not for a few years. And the modelling has indicated that the power that New South Wales consumers would get from an extended Liddell power station would be, I think, around $106 a megawatt hour compared to $83 a megawatt hour being the wholesale price you'd get from new renewable energy. So people need to be alive that what Malcolm Turnbull is trying to urge between two private operators, AGL and Alinta, is a situation that will likely create power prices that are higher than otherwise would be the case. But at the end of the day,
that's not what the ACCC says.
ACCC is talking about competition between competition that would arise from having a greater number of players in the system,
which would have
what the ACCC hasn't addressed.
But that affects consumers and prices.
What the ACCC hasn't addressed is the fact that if you plough $1 billion into this old power station, that then needs to be recouped over 5 years. Not over 30 or 35 years, which is the usual life of a new power station, you have to recoup that cost of $1 billion over 5 years from New South Wales households. It's quite clear that that is going to lead to a spike in power prices. But the core issue here, Patricia, is what you need is a national energy policy so that these decisions can be made rationally within the market rather than Malcolm Turnbull making a knee-jerk response that seems clear to me was a response to the pressure that's been placed on him by Tony Abbott and Barnaby Joyce and others over the last 36 hours to start building new coal-fired power stations. And this is an enormous vote of no confidence by Malcolm Turnbull in his own national energy guarantee policy. Because the reason you would need to extend the life of this power station is if investors, power companies, bankers and lenders were not willing to build new stock. And it's quite clear that with a proper energy policy, they will build new stock that the market operator has said will more than fill the gap left by a 50-year-old power station retiring from the system.
So when Josh Frydenberg meets with his counterparts to try and nut this out in under 2 weeks, do you want the ACT to get on board to ensure that a national energy guarantee is adopted for certainty in the market that you talk about?
Well, we want a national energy policy that is enduring, that is rational, that is stable.
And that's the one on the table.
Yeah, I think that remains to be seen because the submission process that the Energy Security Board that's overseeing this process has been undertaking over the last couple of months has shown there's a very broad sense of consensus within the industry and among other stakeholders that there are some serious design flaws in the model that will go before the COAG in a couple of weeks. The first is that it's likely to entrench, further entrench, the market power of the big three, and the ACCC has had a lot to say about that, because further entrenching market power will push power prices up rather than bringing them down. There have been a range of other concerns people have raised as well about the likelihood that this will lead to a massive collapse in investment in new renewable energy technology over the course of the 2020s. So yes, we're up for a bipartisan policy, but I think this submission process over the last several weeks has really really shone a light on the deficiencies in the current design of the scheme. So I think Josh Frydenberg needs to address those concerns very deeply. That's going to be a problem for him, because the hard right in his own party room is on the march here and clearly want to spike this process.
Just on another issue, Labor MPs have used their taxpayer-funded publication allowance for institutional subscriptions to the John Curtin Research Centre's magazine, costing thousands of dollars. The centre is, as you know, Labor-aligned. It's a think tank. They've not broken the rules, but is that really the right thing to do?
Well, I've seen Bill Shorten has addressed this earlier today. I mean, this is a subscription allowance that has attracted a bit of attention over a number of years. I mean, George Brandis famously used it to accumulate a pretty substantial library for himself over 4 years, spending about $13,000. But I think the commentary on this over the course of today has highlighted the fact that this was, as you say, within the rules, but also Bill Shorten has made it clear that, in his words, he doesn't expect those subscriptions to continue.
So that should just become the de facto rule for all Labor MPs? You don't use your allowance for these sorts of things?
Well, I think Bill Shorten has made his views clear about this, and I don't have anything further to add to Bill's comments.
Mark Butler, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Patricia.
Mark Butler is, of course, Labor's shadow spokesman for climate change and energy, and this is RN Drive. Our number, if you want to text in tonight or any time, 0418 226 576.